This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Beth Voorhees. Yesterday, we introduced you to Nancy Tonkin, a longtime lobbyist at the state legislature. Her specialty is health issues. In November 2013, Nancy learned she had lung, liver, and bone cancer. While waiting to speak to her oncologist at the Charleston Area Medical Center, a PBS documentary film crew came by, and Nancy consented to allow them to record her as Dr. Suzanne Cole explained the bad news. The segment was featured in the series Cancer, the Emperor of All Maladies, that aired about a month ago. But in the course of her treatment, Nancy learned that legislation was needed to address a disparity between insurance coverage for traditional intravenous chemotherapy and new treatments in pill form. Here she explains the difference between the two therapies.
I am taking Tarceva. It cost my insurance company, Blue Cross, $6,000 a month for my 30 pills. Now, with Blue Cross Blue Shield, the pharmaceutical component, I pay half. That is a lot of money. You know, I've been a lobbyist. I have been successful. I have the $3,000 to pay if I need to. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people, Beth, that don't. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of times that the patient will choose not to take the oral chemotherapy and go to the drip therapies, the infusions, which are effective, but this new pill, it does not affect the rest of your body like the drip tends to, because the drip chemotherapy kills all the fast-growing cells in your body, typically, which is why women lose their hair, which is why you get mouth sores, which is why there's a lot of pain in the stomach lining, because those are all real fast-growing cells. The cancer drip kills those. But the Tarceva is more targeted towards the cancer cells themselves. Normally, there is a copay to go into the hospital, even for the drip, but it's minimal in comparison. It's $100. It's $50 every time you go. There's other things added on to that. Mm-hmm. But it was really, you know, every time I got my Tarceva refilled, it was $3,000 I had to write a check for.
So Nancy Tonkin got to work, not as a paid lobbyist this time, but as a patient advocate. At the legislative session earlier this year, Nancy set about to work with her colleagues on House Bill 2493 to prohibit insurance policies and contracts that cover anti-cancer medications from charging higher co-payments, deductibles, or co-insurance for orally administered anti-cancer medications than is required for anti-cancer medications administered by injection or intravenously. Continuing our occasional series, Effective from Passage, Tonkin's explanation of how the bill was written and made its way through the lawmaking process is an example of how lobbyists work.
West Virginia is the 36th state to adopt this bill, so we weren't trying it out for the first time. And it has proven to be very effective for the patients. The physicians don't have to make a decision as to what's the most economical for the patient, mm-hmm. as to what they wanted to treat them with. And that's very important. You know, you want to go with the best treatment, the quickest treatment, and you don't want the patient to say, oh, I cannot afford that.
Right, because that was one of the points made in the CAMC segment on Cancer, the Emperor of All Maladies, was how expensive these new drugs can be. And for a middle-income family, that can really, really stretch the budget, even to the point of not being affordable. So, okay, you're working on this bill. How do the insurance companies feel about it? Were the insurance companies reluctant to cover oral cancer drugs, or were they just unaware that they weren't covering them?
Oh, they were very aware of what was covered and not covered.
All right.
We approached the major lobbyists for the insurance companies, and we know who they are, and we've worked well with them in the past. Mm-hmm. And we had two meetings before we had meetings with legislators with them. And we shared the bills from a couple of the states. We asked for their cooperation. Are there points here that you cannot live with? Can you give us some language that you can support this bill? Let's see if we can't get an agreed-upon bill. That was my dream, because it's passed in 34 other states. They've had to have had involvement with that in lobbying that and amendments for it. And they were living with it. Plus, this is year two now of our federal health reform. And there is actually language in the federal law on limits for what co-pays can be for families. So that was already set. Mm-hmm. And so we did get some language in from Jane Klein and her groups that
she was an insurance representative.
Yes, Jane represents like the HMO Association and some other specific insurance companies. But there is that she asked us to include some limiting language for that related to the federal health care reform bills. And we agreed to that. And then Mark Poland with Blue Cross asked in terms of effective dates that he wanted it to be January 1, 2016. We talked about it. We agreed with that. So we had some involvement. And that's what I've always seen with my 30 years of lobbying is you get some involvement, some participation with the people that it affects. And, you know, then you can get an agreed upon bill and can move forward with a success.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting that you've just given us a lesson in how lobbyists work kind of behind the scenes to craft legislation.
Successful ones do.
Did it help that the two health chairs this year were doctors?
Yes. And then what we ended up doing before the legislative session was that we set up a lunch and we asked the two health chairs and then the two insurance committee chairmen to participate. And we had asked Jane and Mark to join us as well and talk about the bill. And I personally asked Delegate J.B. McCuskey if he would be my lead sponsor in the House of Delegates. And I asked Senator Gaunch, who's the new insurance chairman in the Senate, if he would be the lead sponsor in the Senate.
House Bill 2493 passed the House of Delegates on February 24th. It passed the Senate on March 12th with overwhelming support from both bodies. It was signed into law by Governor Tomlin on March 25th. But that's not the whole story. Again, we get another lesson in lobbying from Nancy Tonkin. The lesson here, to protect your bill from intrusive amendments.
We chose not to do a big bill signing with the governor. We tried to keep this bill sort of quiet, and there was a reason for that, Beth. We really were careful to just define this as oral chemotherapy that the co-payment parity applied to, because there's several other medications that are very expensive, and we felt if it got and I can talk about it now. Mm-hmm. And if it got out there too far, there could be additional amendments to put
the other drugs in there for other conditions,
for other diseases make it.
And then Broadway, and then it's a Christmas tree, and then
it's
not focused anymore.
And then the insurance companies would oppose it. And we knew that from day one, so our strategy was to try to keep it low key, try to keep it just to the oral chemotherapy, and it works. So that strategy works. Bills that are narrowly drafted and that are pretty tight, you've got agreement with the legislative leadership, not to allow big, broad amendments, but if they're aware that, you know, most times a committee member will go to the chairman and say, hey, I'd like to offer a hepatitis amendment to this. And so Senator Gaunch or Delegate McCuskey say, well, we really have an agreement. We don't want anything else on this. We'd really appreciate it if you don't. And that's important communication among legislators. And with a lot of new legislators, you know, we had talked about that you know, we're trying to be very careful about that just to protect this as a narrow issue. So the bill was signed the 26th of March. We're very happy that the governor signed it. We appreciate the groups that were involved in supporting this with us, and our legislative leaders were really fabulous with it. They got the bill drafted properly, got it on the agendas early, and we do want to also thank the Blue Cross lobbyists and the HMO lobbyists for their cooperation.
And that's how lobbyists get the legislature to pass a bill. As for Nancy Tonkin, her oral medication was working until it stopped working. She concluded six rounds of traditional intravenous chemotherapy earlier this month. She says her lung tumors are not growing, her liver tumors are shrinking, and there's been no new bone cancer.
There's a new nonprofit in West Virginia that aims to provide residents with greater access to cutting-edge cancer care. The West Virginia Cancer Clinical Trials Network officially launched this week. The nonprofit is a growing collaboration of cancer physicians and healthcare organizations from across the state. The organization hopes to make more clinical trials available in a state where the need for such care may be the greatest in the country. Glennis Board reports.
The National Cancer Institute describes clinical cancer trials as research studies that involve people. They are the final step in a long process that begins with research in a lab. In fact, most cancer treatments that exist today are the results of past clinical trials. In a press conference, director of the Mary Babb Randolph Cancer Center at West Virginia University, Dr. Scott Remick, explained that clinical trials are key to developing new methods to prevent, detect, and treat cancer. And he said West Virginians need to participate.
This is a state that has, year in, year out, the highest cancer mortality rate in the country. Many tumor types are seeing an increased incidence. And it's unacceptable. I mean, and we know from a study we did that about 20% of the patients leave the state for cancer care. And those patients are the ones we can least afford, and they don't want to leave the state because they want to be closer to home. They want to be able to work. They want to be able to be near their families.
Until now, clinical trials have only been available in a few regions of the state. The network now includes the Mary Babb Randolph Center in Morgantown, United Hospital Center in Bridgeport, Camden Clark Memorial Hospital in Parkersburg, Davis Memorial Hospital in Elkins, Berkeley Medical Center in Martinsburg, and St. Mary's Medical Center in Huntington. The network hopes to continue to grow to include more physicians and medical facilities throughout the state. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Glennis Board in Morgantown.
This is West Virginia Morning at 7:55. Mostly cloudy with a chance of rain today. Temperatures in the 60s. Partly cloudy tonight. Some scattered lingering showers. Overnight lows in the 40s. Mostly sunny on Saturday with highs in the 60s and low 70s. Partly cloudy on Sunday.
Support for West Virginia Public Broadcasting is provided by Appalachian Power, providing electricity to 500,000 customers across West Virginia on the web at appalachianpower.com.
One of acoustic folk and blues's most respected singers, songwriters, and guitarist, Eric Bibb, closes this week's all-new broadcast of Mountain Stage with Larry Gross. Here he plays New World Coming Through on this Mountain Stage Song of the Week. With New World Coming Through, you can hear this song again and more music Saturday night at 8 on Mountain Stage right here on West Virginia Public Broadcasting or at wvpublic.org. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. West Virginia Morning is produced with the assistance of Suzanne Higgins, Clark Davis, Jessica Lilly, Glennis Board, Dave Mistich, Roxy Todd, Liz McCormick, and Jesse Wright. Our theme music is by Matt Jackfert. Our director is Teresa Wills. I'm Beth Voorhees.